Coach O, maybe Coach Ed Ogeron, the Nellison U Tigers, and I'm on that anchor with that that antelope, that sports reloaded, remixed antelope, antelope. Speaking of dopes, them boys on that selection committee, boy, they really screwed LSU. And, you know, Coach O getting mad at that, you know, and I mean, I'm about ready to start kicking some ass. You know, I took Will Wade duck hunting, and we went fishing the other day, and, you know, he ain't very happy. And, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with your boy Mineri. I mean, his team, they finally pulled it out against the damn, what was that? Not Bogalusa State, but it was the University of Texas, some kind of suburb of San Antonio in the hill country or whatever the hell it was. I don't know. I mean, right now, Coach O making sure his AC works and his truck, you know, I'm going to be doing a lot of driving around, maybe doing a lot of recruiting, going to eat a lot of gumbo in people's kitchens and all. I'm going to get your boy to come play with me. But anyway, Coach O pissed off, and, you know, unless you get screwed. Will Wade, he thinks it's because Coach O whipped up on Saban's ass, you know, and they got that the Illumination, and we're calling them Illuminati's, and the Soros, and the Grassy Knoll, and all that shit, you know. I mean, it's all crazy, baby. But I do know that I am Coach O, bitch. Go Tigers.
Warm it all up. Everything you got.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to the Sports Antidote. I'm your host, Danny Belts, episode number 40, United States Federal Government NCAA Committee. Oh, yes, we'll be getting deep into that one, a deep dive. Welcome back. Dickie Salvo comes back to talk about some games that are eye-opening to him in the first round against the spread. You remember Dickie Salvo? Old friend of the podcast, glad to have him back. Bro Exotic comes in batting in the three hole. Tommy Bench batting cleanup. Not even going to tell you what he's going to be talking about. But it's just so much going on right now. I mean, it just makes it so easy to run this podcast the way that we are going in the new direction. Thanks to Coach O for jumping on there. Coach O, love having the head coach, the LSU Tigers, coming on here with the rest of the lineup. Really seeing some great new success here with new listeners and the like. This is what we're looking for. What a week coming up here, March Madness. It's the greatest week on the planet, and the Wokies are trying to take it away from us by having a bunch of cardboard fans in Indianapolis with piped-in noise, but still, it's okay. It's okay. We will persist. I love March Madness. It's probably my it is my favorite time of the year, even more so than college bowl season. It's just incredible. The Wall Street Journal wrote an article 8 years ago. Productivity just plummets because everyone just watches the game. Everyone's gambling. Everyone's got action. Everyone's got a bracket. I don't do brackets. Why, Danny Belts? Because my brackets are toilet paper. You could wipe your ass with a bracket that I make. There's no need to even do it or just endure the whole nonsense. I just like to pick a few games, gamble on them, and rant on this podcast about it. But before we do that, right, we have to talk about – oh, and we do have a few picks coming at you. First spread, Danny Belt sees a couple. One seems to be slightly popular, I think. I don't think it is. Might be. Who cares? What's going on with this federal government NCAA committee? I'm glad you asked. We got a lot of people coming on the show today, so I'm going to have to shorten – my rant. Let's just begin with, I don't know, Richard Jewell. July 27, 1996, the Olympics in Atlanta, Georgia, you may remember. Eric Robert Rudolph. He would end up bombing a lesbian nightclub and two abortion clinics, and he is also responsible for dropping off the three pipe bombs in a backpack on that fateful night at a celebration during the Olympics at an outdoor party. Clint Eastwood made a movie about it called Richard Jewell. If you don't know the story, here's the breakdown. Richard Jewell was a cop and then was fired from being a cop. His dad was a police officer who committed suicide. In the movie, Kathy Bates plays his mom. He's like a guy in his mid-30s. He's really fat, kind of oafy, lives with his mom. And it's just things aren't really going well for Richard Jewell. He's not to say that it's not like the movie like portrays him to be like this overweight. And I'm 15 pounds overweight, 10 pounds overweight. I don't know. So I'm not, you know, fat shaming, but the movie kind of propels it towards they always noticing that he's just always breathing heavy and things of that nature. And he, as a security guard, sees a backpack. He sees a perpetrator he identified initially as the guy that was going to be the bomber, and he had the intuition to even know that something was shady about the guy as he's talking to the fellow police officers on duty there. And then later he sees that same backpack underneath a bench and identifies that as something that is, out of whack, not good. Of course, everybody makes fun of him. You're just trying to be a cop, Richard, this, that, and the other. And then he convinces the cops to bring in the bomb guy. The bomb guy looks at the backpack and drops the flashlight out of his mouth and says, "These are the three biggest pipe bombs I've ever seen." They then begin to move the crowd back without causing a panic. And then the bomb detonates minutes later, saving hundreds, if not thousands, of lives. It was the pipe bomb bursts into nails. Shrapnel goes everywhere. Two people died, many injured. Very, very tragic occurrence. And then Richard Jewell is a hero. And then within 48 hours, he goes from a hero to prime suspect. Why is that, Belts? I'm glad you asked. There are two powerful forces on this planet. And these two are the most powerful forces the world has ever seen. One, the United States government. And that includes the military under the government. The United States federal government is the strongest and most powerful thing that the universe has ever seen, period, full stop. No, it's actually not. No, yes, it is. Number two, the United States media, period. And when they work together, it is the most powerful wrestling tag team in the history of the planet, period. It just is. They teamed up to ruin this man's life. The FBI needed a suspect. They didn't have one. And they decided to pin it on Richard Jewell. Now, the movie Richard Jewell that Eastwood made that I aforementioned didn't really do so well because the media, they tried to cancel it. Why? Because it exploits the federal government and the media as being ludicrously biased, drunk with power, and the like. I watched it on a flight recently. It was a phenomenal movie. And they tried to ruin this guy's life. He fit the profile, lives with his mom, wants a wannabe cop, white male, all the profiles, and then they just literally ruined his life. The media parked on his front door for months. Why'd you do it? Why'd you do it? I didn't do it. Why'd you do it? And then luckily he had a lawyer that stepped up. We'll get into that. There's a whole other side to this I'm going to get into on a later podcast. But when the federal government, the FBI particularly, teams up with the media, it is just an unstoppable rebel force that is drunk with power and is absolutely out of control. We most would agree. 99% of our country would agree. Regardless if you voted for Biden or Trump, we can agree the federal government is insane what they can do. Just think of eminent domain. Hey, man, we need you to move out of your house. Nope. All right, we're just going to knock it down. Go live under a bridge. Got out of the way. We're building a bridge. You can live under it, but your house is gone. Richard Jewell, what a ridiculous, unbelievable story. Luckily, he was acquitted. Actually, they never even officially even read him his rights. Just constant harassment, bugging his house illegally, messing with all his mom's belongings. Just horrible what they did. There's tons of examples. We could go on and on. Oh, I'm getting right into the NCAA selection committee. Just buckle up. Tie your shoes. We're going to go run here. We're jogging now. We're going to sprint in about 5 minutes. Samuel Joseph Wurzenbacher. Remember him? Probably not. You may remember him as Joe the Plumber. That ring a bell? You know, the guy that owned a small business in Ohio in 2008 when President Obama was making his run for president. Against John McLean, McCain. I can't talk about the departed. Wow, what a mule. Anyway, you remember this? This guy, impromptu, and trust me, the media has never thrown President Obama a fastball. It's Cabbage Ball City. And everything is scripted. And even Jake Tapper admitted years ago that all questions had to be filtered through the press secretary at one point. That's absurd. That's ridiculous. That's certainly not what happened from 2000 with Donald Trump. I'll tell you that. It was everything but that. And that's, I don't want to get too much into my opinion on that. I have an opinion on that. Joe the Plumber asked President Obama. He basically said, yo, man, your tax increases are going to be dangerous towards small businesses like mine. He says, well, what do you do? He says, I'm a plumber. What's your name? My name's Joe. Ergo, he's Joe the Plumber. All he did was ask President Obama a simple inquiry about something that is very important, being as where he is a small business owner. And he was right, because under that administration, it made small businesses basically die, made it very difficult. A lot of things were put through Obama. You know what? I'm not even going to go down there. And The Audacity of Hope, the book that he wrote, one of the two books that he wrote, read them both several times. They're both horror novels, horror novels. Go read The Audacity of Hope. I don't read that, then go read Dreams of My Father. Now, this is my opinion. They're horror novels, but here's not my opinion. Chapter 3 talks about, quote-unquote, our Constitution. And in this, Barack Obama continues to talk about not just the small business. If you go to page 56, you can clearly see what he's saying. So he basically just completely flips on what he was talking about in our Constitution regarding protection in particular. I could go on and on and on about this, but I will not. President Obama had the means to stop the media and the federal government from going after Joe the Plumber. All he did was ask a question. A like-minded voter. He was independent at the time. He's not anymore. He actually ran for office in 2012, congressman in Ohio, but lost to the incumbent, but whatever. They made this guy's life a living hell. He went out of business. The media came after him. They were at his door. This is Richard Jewell Jr. All he did was ask a question. CNN's at his door. Wolf blitzed it all. They sent the whole army down there to go after this guy. He asked a fucking question. And it wasn't, Mr. President, how do you feel about killing 200,000 people? No, this was a legitimate question. And Obama couldn't answer it. Go back and watch the YouTube video. He stutters, he sputters, he cucks, per usual. Doesn't answer the goddamn question. Well, why would he? Because he can't, because he knows that what he's put in place is going to destroy small businesses. I sat there and watched a bunch of restaurants close in Louisiana, customers of mine. That's not my opinion. That's a fact. Joe the Plumber, asking a question, all about increases, things of nature, and he gets into more detail, but they came after him, and then he gets audited by the IRS. There's the tag team. He gets audited. Really? No scandals under the Obama administration, except for, we'll start with that one, the IRS auditing of every Republican person that contributed to the CPAC of over $10,000 randomly got audited. Oh, yeah, that was... That's just happenstance, I'm sure. Yeah. I got a bridge in Brooklyn I saved for 15 cents, too. You believe that? Unbelievable. Heaven forbid you asked President Obama a question. Shit, you might get canned. You might get shot. I don't even know. You know, look at him wrong. The way he was protected. And he had a chance to stop this, and he didn't. And the federal government and the IRS and the media tag team, and they Richard Jewell this guy right up his asshole. Thank God that people actually put together some money for this guy to get him back in business, and the media finally left him alone after 2 years. Oh, that's real. Go check it. If they wanted to come cancel me, what am I going to do? I'm screwed. Drunk with power. Drunk with power. Here comes a transition. Speaking of which, LSU is 67-26 in the last 3 years. The best run in school's history. Under Coach Will Wade, this team has been well above what people thought they were and can be. They would have went to the dance last year had we not woken the whole thing up and canceled the tournament. And clearly it wouldn't have mattered because people are still getting COVID now like it matters. Not one college athlete has died from COVID, yet we continue this charade. I am not denying COVID. I had it. But I am telling you that no student athletes have died, nor will they. So calm down. And the fact that coaches have to wear the mask and players don't have to wear a mask on the court, but the players have to wear masks on the bench, stop it. Just, I'm an adult. Dude, just treat me like one, if you can believe that. I actually am an adult. You got to have the mask on. Jay Wright's trying to scream at the ref. He just takes the mask off. Technical foul, bitch. Get that mask back on. What are you doing, Jay? Even though my mom loves your suits, and I'm pretty sure if my dad passed away, she might pursue you somehow. My mom loves Jay Wright. I'm going to fight him. He's a pretty good-looking dude, though. I'm not going to lie. If I was in a gay bar, I'm just kidding. But LSU now has been stuck with an 8 seed yet again. Jerry Palm, an expert in this field, says they were going to be a 5 seed. Joe Lunardi, the expert in the field, said they were going to be a 7 seed. Joe Lunardi, I've met him several times. His late brother, a great man, Rich Lunardi, was the director of admissions to the school that I went to. I mourned his death. A great man, went out of his way to help me while I was at that school in Pennsylvania when my family was still in Louisiana. I'll never forget that. He's a great man. And so is his brother, who is a genius. So you're going to tell me the selection committee knows more than Joe Lunardi? Really? This is his job. This is all this dude does. And that's with LSU beats Arkansas. It begs the question. If LSU, I'm going to get into it here, but if LSU loses to Arkansas in the semis, do they even go to the tournament? They beat a top 10 team, okay? And then they lose to Alabama, another top 10 team, on the last second of the game, on a putback. If a putback goes in, then what? Are they a 7 seed for winning the SEC and beating a team with 2 losses? Just explain to me the logic of how a team that is 9th. Okay, here's what. Okay, so LSU's 18-9, and Texas is 19-7. Nearly the same record. LSU's RPI is 19. This is one of the first times in the last 20 years a team with a top 20 RPI with almost 20 wins in a P5 conference is not a 7 or less. Texas is 19-7 with a 17 RPI. They're 1.5 game differential, 2 games off in the RPI, and Texas is a 3 seed. And LSU is an 8 in the toughest bracket against Michigan. Oh, they don't have livers. I don't care. This is absurd. This is the federal government. This is the media. And then you get up there, that AD from Kentucky wants to get up there and cuck and tell me that he knows more than Joe. You don't even know more than me. I should be on the committee. There's no way LSU is an 8 seed. Try a 6 seed. But yet BYU, yeah, they're a 6 seed. Haven't beat a ranked team all year. Florida is a 7 seed. Go find your sister. Florida's a 7 seed. Oh, and the Coup de Grace. Tennessee, a team that LSU skull dragged, is a 5. This is not an LSU podcast, but boy, man, they love coming after this school. The FBI investigates Will Wade while... Ugh. Don't go down that rabbit hole, Belts. I will. Dick Vitale. Can't even understand a word he's saying. Idiot. Somebody just, he needs to just geriatric, get his ass out of here. It's just over for him. It's over. Stop it. FBI investigates Will Wade. Meanwhile, Coach Cox over here paying Zion. It's on the record. He defends Rick Pitino. Knew his play. There's no difference between Rick Pitino, there's a special place in hell for him after what all that stuff happened at Louisville and Dick Vitale. Because he's a swamp creature. He's a Jeb Bush. Okay, he's a swamp creature. It's just like Trump said. And I don't care what you say about Trump. He was right. He exposed the Republican swamp creatures for who they are and the Democrats swamp creatures. Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, Senator Graham, all of the – you don't even have to be a quote-unquote rhino. But there's a swamp creatures and it's Rick Pitino. It's Coach K. This is the drain the swamp thing. We need to get rid of these people. It's Dick Vitale. He would be the media side of this. Dick, and on the other side, you'd have the federal government side of the NCAA, and they work in cohesion. It's pathetic. It's getting to be ridiculous. And the selection committee gets to tell us what we're seeing and what we're not seeing. Don't tell me this is chocolate ice cream when it's white. Don't tell me there's no pepperonis on my pizza. I'm looking at it. Don't tell me this is a vodka tonic. It looks like Jim Beam. And don't tell me LSU is a goddamn 8 seed. I'm glad they are now. And they have to play St. Bonnie, one of the best mid-majors in the country. St. Bonaventure is a load. Extremely well-coached, very deep, old, seniors, big, extremely athletic. Not as athletic as LSU, but pretty damn good for a mid-major. There's a reason why this spread's 1.5. And if they win that game, then they get the right to play arguably the best team in the country. Thanks a lot. Well, I hope they do. I hope they drag Michigan and give a middle finger to the selection committee. And I'm not done with the selection committee by a long shot, but there's too many people coming on the show. I'm going to get drunker and drunker per guest. By the time it's going to be Bro Exotic, and then when Salvo, and by the time Tommy Bench comes on, I'm going to be sloshed. Just letting you know that now. And if you don't like it, guess what?
World needs plenty of bartenders. 2 weeks. With pay. Good.
Now, you ain't cucking me. Uh-uh. Selection committee is just as corrupt and morally bankrupt as our media. It's including Fox News. Fox is all about Republicans. Chris Wallace was the hardest on Trump in the debate. Stop it. The entire media is outrageous. We all know it. The federal government out of control. The IRS. And the goddamn NCAA selection committee. They should be investigated. And yes, what is that music you haven't heard in a while? Belts is going to give you some winners here. But we're not done with the NCAA selection committee by a long shot. Uh-oh. I got a whole nother parable preacher's message coming your way. And I took it easy on this one. I did some research. I have some... Wait till I tell you who's on this committee and how biased and how motivated they are financially to do things. They're seriously criminals. So I'm coming after that ass. Coming after that ass, bitch. So many games to choose from here. Let's start with my best friend's team in Rock Hill, South Carolina, the Thrill. I was just with my buddy in Rock Hill. Haven't seen him since my wedding. Roommate in college, good guy, great family, great wife, good kids. We had some good food. We even drove on the campus of Winthrop, the Eagles. I've heard Winthrop is popular. I don't really think they are. 66% right now on all the aggregate sites seem to lead towards the favorite, Villanova. Jay Wright in his amazing suits that my mom has a crush on. Yes, it's true. Winthrop, much like Houston, who we spoke of a long time ago, about 6 weeks ago, Houston and Winthrop have one thing in common. They play a ton of people. 10 to 12 guys with 15-plus minutes. They empty the bench in rotations. Extremely well coached by Pat Kelsey. He's been there forever. And this is Winthrop's fifth or sixth trip. You've seen their name before. They have one of the better players in mid-majors in DJ Burns. This kid can go, and he's probably going to go. Going to be a very difficult assignment for Villanova, as they are always a grueling defensive team. But there's a reason why a team like Nova, who has won titles, always in the mix of things, is only a 6.5-point favorite, and it's going up. Opened at 5.5, jumped a whole point, went back down to 6, back up to 6.5, minus 120. Wait on this one, but for the sake of the podcast, we're going to have to take them at 6.5. You will get that at better, you'll get a better number if you wait, and I know everyone wants to think that this is a popular dog. It is not a popular dog. There's a lot of other ones that are over 60%, Ohio in particular. St. Bonaventure is a very popular dog, which we'll be getting into. Let's get into Arkansas and Colgate. Nobody destroys the tooth decay of Arkansas like Colgate. An offensive powerhouse, Keenan Records and Jordan Burns, not DJ, but Jordan Burns, both averaging 20-plus points. Colgate boasts the number 2 offense in the country under Gonzaga, and they square off against Arkansas. 9-point favorite is Arkansas. I'm not a big fan. Yes, they can play. Yes, they can go. I don't know if the upset's coming quite here. I don't know, but I do know Arkansas is number 7. Here you have one of the few times ever in tournament history, a 2-2, top 10, almost 2 top 5 offenses in the country are going to be going at it on a neutral court, and because of that, I don't know how we don't take the over at 162, minus 125. We are getting off of that hook, we're going to take the over at 162. It'll probably drop down to that, but for the podcast's sake, we have to go ahead and call it out now. 162, we like the over, and why not? NCAA Selection Committee wants to give us a middle finger. We'll give them one right back. You want me to take the Tigers here? I will. Personally, I'll take the Tigers at minus 126 on the money line, but as far as intents and purposes for the podcast, I am taking LSU -1.5. This is a good spot for them. I do agree that the public is all over. St. Bonaventure, LSU, not a big popular favorite. There's a reason there's a short spread. I just told you about that. St. Bonnie's pretty damn good. But on the record, I'll be taking LSU -1.5, and I'll be taking them when they play Michigan. We're going back to White House, and Michigan. Quick recap. Give me Winthrop plus the 6.5, the Eagles in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Apparently, if you want to be a teacher, this is the university to go to. Arkansas, tooth decay fighting Colgate. Over 162. Give me the LSU Tigers and Will Wade. Fuck you, NCAA committee. -1.5. Let's get into White Bitch of the Week.
White Bitch, give me some chon chon.
Stay away from me.
Give me some chon chon.
Chingato madre.
Give me some chon chon.
Okay.
Mitch Barnhart. He's the athletic director for Kentucky. He is the biggest swamp creature on that committee. He needs to be removed, and I need to be placed in his stead. Because I can at least remove my opinion and actually be objective when it comes to things that actually matter, like proper seeding in the NCAA tournament. He is not a fan of LSU. He is not a fan of Skip Bertman, the previous AD. He's not a fan of the AD right now. He's not a fan of Will Wade. He's not a fan of the Tigers. And he's the loudest voice on that committee, and I can't wait. Oh, I got so much information on this dude. I'm going to bust hell wide open with this. Wait till this tournament's over. We're going to get deep into the committee, balls deep. You, my friend, for your bias and sanity and your constant disregard for being an objective selection person on this committee has made you white bitch of the week. And your father was probably a coward. I'm getting pretty ripped. Has anybody seen Bro Exotic? The Onion Ring, where even fiction is reality. Everything on here is a fact. With guest host, Bro Exotic, Super Woke. Bro Exotic jumping on the sports antelope number 40. What's up, bro?
Hey, what's up, dude? Bro Exotic, founder of Me Too, Mu Epsilon Theta Omega Omega. What's going on, bro?
Sick. Yo, so much going on right now these days. I don't even know. I mean, it's just so easy for you. But I think you have a particular, kind of like Liam Neeson, a particular set of skills. Some things you want to talk about right now. And, this is your segment, so the floor is yours.
Absolutely, bro. So as we've seen in the market recently, Wogan Token flew through the roof, and I, in particular, profited pretty big on that one, man.
Wogan Token is literally up like 65 billion%.
It's ridiculous, and I can tell you exactly what it is. So, to understand Wogan Token, all right, let me explain firstly how the Wokonomy works. Okay, so how the Wokonomy works.
So we're not talking about the economy. We're talking about, I believe you said.
Well, kind of, sort of. Let me explain.
Okay.
So most people would invest economically through like supply and demand, but in the Wokonomy, we invest through emotion and pandering. Okay. I'll give you an example. So recently, I profited a few million after I sold all my stock in Wogan Token. So like at the time, Wogan Token stayed pretty stagnant on the market, and emotions hadn't been high enough to affect pandering for weeks, but I caught it at the right time when Tinder came through like social justice, ambiguously like beautiful knights. They came through and they put this arbitrary PSA to end racism toward Asians, and the woke economy started booming, and I sold it 3,700%, and now I have a 50-foot yacht named Privilege Police.
Okay, let's go forward. So what else?
So that's it, man. I mean, that's just like an example of how it works, how the emotion and pandering work, similar that you would like understand supply and demand.
All right. So what you're saying, so get this straight, is that pandering caters towards the up and down of Wogan Token. Just so I'm understanding this correctly.
Absolutely. You have to be reading the market, what emotions are being affected and which companies will pander to them. And we just caught Tinder at the right time, just ambiguously talking about how Asians are mistreated in this country. And I still don't even understand it, but I mean, I profited nonetheless, you know.
Actually, I don't think our listeners heard that. So you may want to tell them about the Asian Tinder thing real quick. You may want to bring that up because I don't think you did.
Okay. So Tinder recently just posted this completely ridiculous PSA, just way out of it. Let me I'm pulling it up right now. So Tinder posts this Stop Asian Hate PSA. Our hearts go out to those affected by violence against Asian community and Pacific Islander community. By demonstrating anti-racism, we can protect each other from hateful attitudes and actions that go against our values and make Tinder a safe space for all. We take intolerance seriously, and if you experience racism, we want to know about it. So, like, Tinder's, like, totally awesome now.
Right. Awesome. Sick. Well, so we have that. We have Woken Token. We have so many other things that are happening right now. I mean, I don't even know where to begin. Don't know where to start, but I mean, or stop. But needless to say, I mean, Bro Exotic, this just keeps you in business almost forever.
Absolutely. So much more to tithe than the Church of Woke, too. So, you know.
Yeah, just more money for you to tithe. You know, you're 10% or is it 20%? Who cares? Who knows?
Who knows? You'll never know.
Yeah, I won't. I know. But anyway, Bro Exotic, thanks for jumping on the podcast. I'll let you go. Anything you want to close with? Or I don't want to shut you off here.
Oh, no, absolutely, bro. I appreciate you not canceling me before I could ask people to follow me on Instagram. It'd be Bro Exotic, B-R-E-A-U-X, Exotic. And no woke, no joke, stay woke, bro.
All right, man. Good luck with the woke. By the way, dude, Woken Token. I know I've said this, but it is rolling right now. Yep. And congratulations.
Cryptocurrency of the future.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, bro.
Yeah. I mean, unbelievable. All right. We'll talk to you next week, bro.
All right, man. Take care, bro.
Bro Exotic. Oh, man. The gift that keeps giving. Let's bring on somebody back for the first time here. Dickie Salvo. Talk about some hoops. Some gambling. The red wine is flowing. Dickie Salvo jumping back on the sports antelope. It's been a while. Dickie, what's up, Chief?
Not a whole lot, man. Missed you guys. I hope all has been well. I know you've been killing it with the cast. And yeah, it's a pleasure to jump back on March Madness that time of year. You can't go wrong, man.
You definitely can't. And you, I love you on college basketball, and especially, you know, kind of my forte, but you're way better than me. But look, let's start off with kind of what we wanted to discuss. Gonzaga, as people think they're kind of this kind of, I don't know, this like purple champion is what they say. But when I look at Gonzaga, I see one of the most dangerous teams I've seen in my entire lifetime. What's your take on that?
Yeah, well, I think when you look at the whole season with COVID and just the way it disrupted scheduling, it really became, you know, something where the top teams and the teams with the most continuity have been the best all year. And when you look at them, they just have too much talent. I mean, it starts at the top. I'm not really that big of a fan of their center, Timmy, but I think the rest of the lineup is just completely loaded. They can shoot the three. They're never really out of a game. Suggs, you know, he kind of is a Westbrook style player in my opinion, if I could compare him to somebody, but they also have, you know, other guards. I like their defense enough. Not a fan of the center, you know, as much, but Kispert's a guy who will probably be, you know, first round pick. Their roster's loaded. It's kind of like their time. And I think when you look at that region and that bracket, at least it's almost just set up for them to kind of, you know, walk through it a little bit. I'd be interested to hear what you think about them and what you think about the field. I think all the one seeds are you know, pretty good teams. There's some other teams I like, but, you know, in them in general, I would say, you know, they just stand out.
Yeah. Suggs is sick. You know, Nembhard, obviously another amazing guard. And clearly we see here, you know, Gonzaga's backcourt being – one that if you really want to fuck with one of them, I mean, I'm not really sure if you're going to, you know, mess with these guys defensively or offensively. Here's a good example. Iowa played them. The last ranked team they played was Iowa, okay, on December 23rd. And Iowa shot 19% from three and only lost by 10. Now, that's a weird stat. Iowa's a pretty good team. They have one of the best players in the country, right, in Garza. And, I mean, it's just the fact that Gonzaga can kind of have an off day, win that game, neutral court. Scary team to me, especially with they're not deep, though. They're not deep at all. They're not deep. But, I mean, we can clearly agree that I think –
I completely agree with you on that. You know, their depth is limited. I'm not, like I said, I don't like them at center. Like, I think they get into a game with Baylor or some of these other teams, and like you said, if they get beat inside, you know, because really Baylor, Illinois, they all have good centers. Michigan as well. So you get into a game like that, and they don't make threes, they're very vulnerable.
No, absolutely. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I think Gonzaga is the best team in the country, bar none. We will see what will happen with them. Let's move on to, I think you want to talk about Texas Tech. How about my boy Kyler Edwards? Mac McClung, my favorite white boy in the world next to white chocolate. What's your take on Texas Tech, man? I mean, do you think they have a rip right here? What's your take on that?
Well, I like the region that they're in. I think they can, you know, I think they can mix it up in that region. And yeah, you named a couple of the guys. I like Shannon, too, as a younger guard. You know, they're well coached. They've made runs before. I think them I think they're a sixth seed. To me, that was just a, you know, some of the futures are still kind of slow to come out on certain sites, but I've been looking at them as far as, you know, regional futures. And I look at that team and I'm like, yeah, that team could make a run easily. You know, when you look at their ranking, I think they were in the, you know, they were 23rd in KenPom. You know, they're one of their teams that's pretty balanced offensive and defensively. They get to the free throw line. They attack the basket. They don't just settle for threes. I think Utah State, you know, not the greatest opponent. You know, people were kind of hyping them up a little bit, but, you know, other than the center and side, that their roster isn't really as good outside of Cata. So decent first round matchup. I think they can go places in that region. I look at their futures. You know, I want to see some of the other numbers. You know, I've seen Ohio State at like 5-1 in that region, which, you know, or plus 4,500, which to me would be, you know, interesting. I think they're good enough to make a run too. I mean, they can shoot the three. You know, the Big Ten was pretty deep. So, you know, those are a couple that I'm looking at. But I think Texas Tech for sure.
So talk about LSU, man. I mean, LSU goes ahead and, you know, they almost win the SEC. They lose to Alabama on a finger roll in that did not roll in. And henceforth, they become, once again, for the fifth time in the last 16 years, a 8 or 9 seed, condemned against the best team in the country, which, for all intents and purposes, livers playing or not against Michigan, LSU being out to play that team is absurd. Can we agree that LSU being an 8 seed is just motherfucking ridiculous? Or am I just being a homer here in New Orleans? I don't know. Tell me.
Well, first of all, it's funny because I bet – a couple futures, and I have Gonzaga, I have Baylor, I have Illinois, but I also had Houston, you know, at smaller money, and I also had LSU. It was like 100-1. I put like $20 on it or something. I mean, I do like their team. I don't know if they really play enough defense. I think they probably should have been. I think really them and St. Bonaventure probably should both be like 7 seeds. You know, if you look at the rankings, so it's kind of, I do think this is one of the better games in terms of the 7 versus 10 and 8 versus 9s, because I think both these teams are really good. It's hard to pick this game, but I don't think they got robbed completely as an 8 seed. A tough game, by the way. I think it's probably one of the better games. I think this is on Saturday at 1:45. So I'd love to catch at least the second half of this game. You know, depending on my work schedule. But yeah, I like LSU. I like their team. I just don't know if, you know, when you rank outside the top 100 on defense, you know, how far can you really go? But at 100-1, I thought they were, you know, interesting at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, LSU definitely extremely talented. A lot of their season, they lost Texas Tech on last play of the game, basically, Alabama in the SEC championship, last play of the game, that type thing. As far as my money goes, and this is the Drunk Neighbor, who's a huge LSU fan, as you know.
Oh, I love Drunk Neighbor. Love him.
Oh, yeah, he loves you too, bro, trust me. But, I mean, we'll wait, but like, at the same time, though, I feel like LSU kind of pins themselves in weird situations late in games where timeouts aren't utilized correctly. Just it's a lot of the bullshit that you really don't want to – it's just not – how do I say this? It's just not a team you want to hang your anchor on. How about that? You know, is that fair?
I can see that. Yeah. I mean, I get it. They,
however, though, Dickie, I'm starting to cut you off. They have 2 first rounders on their team right now.
Oh, Thomas is a beast, dude. Yeah, no.
They could beat anyone, and they could lose to anyone.
Fact. Yeah, no. I mean, the talent level, and the athleticism, and like the level their program's at. They're, you know, some of these schools, like, you know, obviously, you know, the football has really made their school what it is, but they've had some really
baseball
good teams.
Too.
They had,
baseball.
Yeah, you're right about baseball too. But I mean, they had Shaq back in the day. I mean, they're not some, like, you know, little program. When they have talent, you know, they tend to have really good teams. And I agree that they made a real run in the SEC tournament. And when you look at Alabama, yeah, I mean, they're basically, They almost beat Alabama, right? Like on a tip in at the end of the game, and Alabama's a 2 seed, and people are in love with Alabama. They act like they're, you know, going to Final Four, blah, 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 blah. Alabama's in Texas's region, you know, if we, not to segue away from, you know, all the intertwining the Big 12 and the SEC. I like Texas as another, you know, potential future in that division. Outside of the 1 seed, their team, I think if they get past Alabama, and that's not going to be an easy game because, you know, Alabama is good, but I look at Texas as a team that they could kind of make a run in that region.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you had one more thing you wanted to touch on before we let you go. We'll have you on for the entirety of college basketball. You will be on this show every motherfucking day.
Well, you know,
let's talk about – I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
you. I was going to say, San Diego State. This is another, like, we have to talk about these guys.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. And I wanted to say thank you for having me. You know, it's busy being the governor of a state and still being able to come on the podcast and whatnot.
But, Governor Cuomo of New York, it's difficult for you to do what you do.
It's not that difficult anymore because I'm going down in flames. So now I have more time on my hands, as you guys have seen with some of my social media. But no, you hit the nail on the head with San Diego State. You know, that's another team I like in their region. I was kind of surprised they were as good as they were this year. Demolished UCLA at the beginning of the year. They had some rough losses. Didn't really beat anybody all that good. They could fall flat, but I kind of like them in that region. You know, I think they have a chance. I mean, they get Syracuse in the first game. That's kind of a gimme. I don't think Syracuse is that good. That's one game I'll probably target. A couple other games I like. I told you about Drake, kind of a public game, but I look at that game on Thursday and I see a team that might be motivated to kind of make a statement after a pretty good regular season. Now you're playing Wichita. I think Drake has more offense. The pace will be critical in that game, but a little bit public, but Drake. Another game, you know, like I said, San Diego State, but also Loyola Chicago against Georgia Tech. I think Georgia Tech coming off that ACC win where a bunch of teams dropped out due to COVID. Their resume is a little bit inflated that, you know, there's a reason Loyola is favored. I think they have a lot of benefits in that game. And then the last game I want to touch upon was as far as first rounders, you know, Ohio open plus 10.5. I know it's public. I know Virginia's looked bad. They've had, you know, COVID issues, injuries. Ohio State has, you know, 4 or 5 guys who can score in double figures. They got healthier as the season went on. They navigated through a little bit of underrated MAC conference to some extent. Not that it's that good or deep in any way, but I think Buffalo's a decent team. There's a couple others, but I like that game as a game to watch because it could be, you know, at least from a numerical standpoint, one of the bigger upset, you know, potentials in the first round. So that's what I'm looking forward to, man. And yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Let's call this out. What are you talking about? Like, what do you like in that game? I didn't really get that to
Ohio. Buffalo. Ohio. I like Ohio. I mean, I would say Ohio against Virginia. That's a spot where the number went from 10 to 7. I mean, it's going to be a little bit public. People are kind of jumping on the bandwagon of Virginia sucks. You know, they lost in the first round a couple years ago before winning the national championship, obviously. But I just think you look at that game and Virginia doesn't really score. They go, you know, they can kind of go in lulls offensively. The ACC did not have anybody rated that well when you look at the way the brackets came out. I'm fading, you know, if you look at my trends, I'm kind of fading the ACC a little bit when you look at Georgia Tech versus Loyola. And then I just think Virginia is a team against Ohio where even if the public's on Ohio, for a number to jump 3 points in less than 48 hours, it does say something about the potential of that game. It's hard for me to envision a scenario where Virginia like wins easily. You know what I mean? I just don't envision that happening.
That's right. Once you're on the show, it's a big move, and I like that move. By the way, you know, San Diego State, I believe their coach is Dutcher. To go back to that game, I think that there is somehow a bunch of – there shouldn't be a lot, but there is a lot of value on San Diego State in the way this man goes about his business. And as – I can't believe you're fading Virginia, who I have been milking this team for so many years. Tony Bennett and the pack line defense, but it's okay, man. I like it. I'm not going to – I don't have a notion on that. No other. But I'll tell you this though, man. Dickie, I love having you on this podcast, bro. I love having you for March Madness. And anything you want to close out with before we have you back on next week?
Just San Diego State 76th in bench minutes. Syracuse 344. So second half of that game, you know, it could be interesting too.
Yeah,
but I like San Diego State. I like San Diego State. No, nothing at all, man. I'm just happy to be back. I've been crazy busy. You know, I do miss you guys. I hope all is well with everybody out there. Everybody's, you know, hanging tough during weird times. But, dude, I'm happy to be back on. I'm really glad that, you know, March Madness is about to start. And it's always a pleasure, man. Always, always a pleasure to talk to you guys. And I hope all is well, dude.
Yeah, man. We'll have you back on next week, Dick. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Yeah, sounds like a plan, brother. Have a good week. Take care.
Tommy Bentz jumping on the Sports Antidote, episode number 40. What's going on, pal?
Not much, Chief. Just living the dream here. Living the dream.
Yeah. And there is a smorgasbord of things to talk about today. I don't even know where to begin. I'll let you go ahead and take it from the beginning, and maybe I'll chime in. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. Bed Bath me on.
We just don't know if we'll have enough time. So
let's see.
Topic number one, non-fungible tokens. Okay, Bench. What are we talking about? What NFTs? I saw something. What's going on here? Okay, this is like the latest craze, and of course, everybody's all happy to find ways to use blockchain technology, which is, you know, the digital technology behind cryptocurrencies that people talk about. It's essentially a way to have unlimited transparency and unlimited security and unlimited anonymity. And you're thinking like, well, how can you have all those things in an unlimited amount? And it's like, well, that's part of what makes it so special. And of course, to people more technical and have a deeper understanding, they would poke holes in that and say, well, it's not really, but essentially that's what it is. Unlimitedly transparent in that these ledgers that are kept for blockchain activities, you know, anyone can see them with the right sort of ability to interface with them. And if you can decode them, you can understand what's moving from where and where it originated, where it's kept, all that kind of stuff. But it's anonymous because it's not like your name is tagged next to it. It's just a wallet address or some other identifying number that could then sort of be tied back to you. But again, there's protections there. And then it's very secure because each block of data builds on the block before. And so there's ways to tell if the blocks of data have been manipulated in some kind of way. Okay, so that's blockchain. So NFTs, non-fungible tokens. What are we getting at? I saw a story that Jack Dorsey sold his first tweet for $100,000 for charity. How can you sell a tweet? I mean, a tweet is just like a digital thing that you typed up and threw up out there. You know, you vomited onto the internet for all to see. How do you, okay. That's what this non-fungible token infrastructure is doing. It is a way to authenticate the originality and authenticity of some digital asset, like a tweet. You know, I own that tweet. I can prove it. It's from my Twitter. I now give you ownership of that tweet. Okay. A more practical and perhaps easier to understand application would be digital artwork. So if I'm an artist, I create a digital piece of art and I embed non-fungible token characteristics using blockchain in it. You can tell that I was the creator of it. I'm giving it to you or selling it to you. And that is recorded in this, you know, cloud-based ledger that then sees that I've transferred it from me to you. You now are the owner of it. You have the rights to it. It's interesting. And it's come up very kind of not out of nowhere, but in terms of public awareness, it's one of these things that just in the last 4 to 6 weeks, seems like it's coming out of nowhere. Like a lot of these things, it's probably been bubbling around in the sectors that have been focused on that sort of thing for quite some time, but kind of coming to the public awareness right now. So why did this catch my attention? Well, I heard the story about Jack Dorsey selling a tweet, thought that was interesting. LeBron sold a couple digital things. It's when Bill Maher says we're a silly people, we are looking for things to shove money into. Now there's a larger discussion about, well, perhaps this will prevent inflation from occurring because there are more things to shove these obscene quantities of money that are being printed and created. So there's greater number of asset classes to shove these into. Whereas 100 years ago, if you think about the difference between what you could buy in 1910 versus 1900, there was some difference. There were some new products that came out in that first decade of the previous century, but it wasn't radically different. However, think about the things you can stick your money into now as opposed to the year 2011. right? So I just think there's more things to stick money into. Getting a little off track here, talking about how these new assets. Okay, so bring it back. This caught my attention. I almost didn't believe it.
We gotta move quick. All right. We're already on 7 minutes on this.
I didn't believe it when I saw this. You can buy a non-fungible token of woke points. You heard me. Woke points. Somebody took the time to create a token. And it's nothing more than a digital image that says, you know, 50 or whatever the denomination, woke points. And then a little description that says, you know, send this to your buddy if they do something really woke. And I'm just thinking, what a bunch of chuckleheads. Like, we are a silly people. If that's the kind of thing anybody's going to spend 2 cents on to virtue signal to somebody else that I think you're so woke, I will actually spend money on it to show you that I acknowledge your virtue of being woke. What kind of society are we living in where people are going to throw money?
Bro. It's done. It's over.
We are silly people. Nobody in China is worried about buying and selling woke points. Okay,
no, they're not. They're too busy doing other things.
Like right. They're too busy cornering the market on rare earth metals, you know, which is the thing that we're all going to need for all the digital devices over the next 50 years and all the green energy jobs and things like that. They're too busy probably refining and perfecting nuclear technologies. And anyway, so that's there's your primer on non-fungible tokens, woke points. One of the sites that helps people create those is this OpenSea.io. That's OpenSea, like Ocean Sea, SEA.io. And just type in woke points. It's there. It's I can't even believe it. I can't even believe I stumbled across it. I saw it on totally some social
media. I don't know why you can't believe it. I think this is the new age of technology here. We are going to random websites and we are doing woken token.
Right.
And we have random woke. And this is what's up. And you know what? Can you give me 50 woke points today? Because I actually, I was going to say something funny, but I couldn't figure it out. But if I could have said something there, let's say.
You drank grass-fed free-range milk this morning. That would be like 10 woke points, I think, yes. If you did that. As opposed to regular.
Not so much 50. Industrial. Not so much 50 varietal. Yeah.
Might just
10,
be 10.
Yes.
10 woke points. Right. All right. I'll see if I can hook you up with some woke points, and then you can certify that you are the owner and holder of those. So, all right, radically changing
directions.
Let's
get it going, man. We only got 20 minutes, man. You're at 9 minutes now. We got to grow.
Going from woke to the other direction. Governor Cuomo. Okay, hey, steam is building. the avalanche is coming. Again, the avalanche isn't coming because he, you know, potentially killed 10,000 old people and old, or his policies led to the excess death of old people in old people homes. Look, old people in old people homes were going to die early on in the outbreak. I don't think anybody's blaming him for the initial round. But when his policies led to additional deaths, and this is always the problem. Again, it wasn't that Nixon was going to get in trouble for the guys breaking into Watergate. It was that he was tangentially involved in the cover-up. Cuomo's not getting in trouble just because people died in the nursing homes. He should be in trouble for them trying to cover it up, juke the data, mess with it, and try to present an image better than what it is. But again, that's not even what he's going to get. That's not going to be his undoing. His undoing is going to be he's a creeper around women. There's a handful of women he probably went beyond just sexual harassment and would probably qualify as sexual assault because it was unwanted touching. I don't know if it crossed the line to aggravated sexual assault. And so far, the R word has not come out. Nobody's flat out accused him of rape. But you got to think where there's smoke, there's fire. Sooner or later, somebody's going to come out. But the idea that that'll be his undoing is interesting. However, he's made it very clear he has taken the Wolf of Wall Street approach. He's not leaving. He's not effing leaving. And I think his calculus is this. If he can get through the next 6 to 9 months, if he is still the governor of New York come January 1st, 2022, the Democrats they're going to have to throw in their lot with him to get him reelected. They can't just give up on him and all turn their back and say, you know, I get what'll happen over the next few months. If they don't convince him to step down, there'll be an investigation and he'll have to do some kind of public mea culpa where he'll never admit to doing anything. He just, I allowed my comfort and that it'll be something like that. He'll try to fade into the background, and then he'll come out swinging for his 2022 reelection. He's not going anywhere. He's got a game plan on how to handle this, and it'll be amazing to watch all the Democrats that'll close ranks around him and support him in his 2022 gubernatorial run for the state of New York. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on. That, you know, while he seems to be on the outs with most New York high-level New York Democrats like Schumer, Gillibrand, even AOC is saying he needs to go. Unless he gets a serious primary challenger in the Democrat Party, he'll have to be their nominee. They can't not
be. Is anybody more serious than Chuck Schumer when he puts his glasses down? Have you seen when he puts those glasses down?
That's how you know something profound is about to be said. Like Donald Trump incited the erection. I mean, insurrection.
You mean the erection.
The erection. Yeah. Yes. Even Schumer made a face after he said that, realizing the Freudian slip that had just occurred.
And actually, I looked him up. You know, he did ace the SAT 1600.
Not a surprise.
I couldn't believe it. But anyway, let's move on. Next one here. We got to keep this rolling, bro.
European and Canada vaccine debacle. Now, we have all been told on multiple occasions for the last 70 years, and it should go on until time in memoriam, that Europe and Canada are just such paragons of virtue. We should strive to be like them. Our brash American, you know, grotesque overdoing it. We're just so awful. We're just, because Donald Trump is the embodiment of everything wrong with America and how obnoxious we are. And there's even a book called The Obnoxious American about how the Soviets were better at foreign policy in third world countries during the Cold War. And we're just terrible. Yeah. Do you know who's leading the world in terms of countries with a population greater than 50 million in vaccine distribution? The UK is up on us by a little bit. They're about 7 to 8% ahead of us in terms of shots per 100 people. Every other European country and Canada are so far behind, it's embarrassing. There are literally some third world developing nations that are doing better in vaccine distribution than major EU powers. Italy, I don't even think Italy has cracked 1 per 100. Right now, the US is somewhere around 33 per 100 people have at least gotten one shot in the arm. But no, we're supposed to look toward Europe for how to run our governments. Those socially democratic countries, democratic socialism. That's really what we should be looking to. Those paragons of virtue and helping and sucking at everything. I mean, let's just call it how we see it. Who cares if they keep winning the World Cup? Okay. No one cares. No one cares. Who put a man on the moon? Shut up. Go away. Nobody cares. And we're doing better at this vaccine thing than you. And you know who we have to thank for it? Tommy Bench, here he goes. He's going to go on a dot on Trump as the greatest president. I'm not going on that. But when it comes to this, when it comes to this particular issue, there's a reason why Europeans and Canada headed one way and the U.S. headed another. I think Trump deserves credit because early on he realized this was more of a business decision. Sometimes in business, you just got to write the check. It's painful, but you got a problem staring at you. And the business decision is write the check. Doesn't matter how much it costs. This problem needs to be taken off the table or it will be so costly in the long run that we won't be able to deal with it. So the U.S. approach throughout the summer and fall of 2020 in terms of acquiring the vaccines was to go to the vaccine makers and say, you just fill in how many zeros go on this check and we'll take the first 300 million doses. Where the Europeans and Canada, they wanted to negotiate and, you know, talk about partnerships. Whereas Trump said, well, we'll just print the money anyway. Just throw another zero on there and make sure we get the first 400 million doses. And look at where we are compared to Europe. Now, the one country that's absolutely knocking it out of the park is the Palestinian. Israel is knocking it out of the park. They have essentially gotten a shot in 102 out of 100 people's arms. Now you're thinking, well, hold on, what does that mean? What it means is A high percentage of their population, almost 65-70%, has gotten one shot, and almost 45% or 50% has gotten that second shot. I mean, by the end of March, they might be approaching 60-70% of their population has gotten both shots. So Israel's really the cutting edge in terms of vaccine distribution. But again, America, far ahead of almost every European nation, with the exception of the United Kingdom, doing much better than Canada. And Canada, and the idea that they have, we can't travel to Canada, or you got to quarantine for 2 weeks. We should build a wall on the northern border. That's what I'd like to see. Whoever runs in 2024, talk about building a wall on the northern border. So all those maple syrup drinking hockey fan, just, I don't want them. Don't want to deal with them. And there endeth the lesson.
Yeah, a lot of cuckoldry coming up there on the north. And, you know, their prime minister is such a great leader.
Oh, you're talking about Angela Merkel's girlfriend, Justin Trudeau?
Oh, yes. Yes. He reminds me a lot of the person that ran for Senate in your state, Beta Cuck O'Rourke. As a matter of fact, they're almost kissing cousins. Yeah.
They practically are. I wouldn't be surprised if...
All right, go ahead, pal. Wrap it up. Let's go.
Well, just, you know, another interesting news week. Let's see how things turn. Woke points. Go check out that openc.io and search for woke points.
How ridiculous is it? I am going to check it. It's just so...
See it.
This is a real thing.
We sent it out on the Sports Anecdote Instagram page. Go check it out. It's ludicrous, the kind of things they're coming up with now. Keep an eye on Cuomo. Great. It'll be interesting to see if the fever pitch... I can't imagine he's not leaving. You will have to, it will be like Scarface. How all the Democrats thought Trump was going to be, you know, pulling him out of the White House. That really is going to be Cuomo. I could see him getting a couple AR-15s and holding out in the governor's mansion in Albany. He's not going anywhere. And just watch, check out the Bloomberg vaccine distribution tracker. Go through there. You can look at the different countries and just see what a joke some of the distribution rates are in these European countries that are held up as these paragons of governance and virtue and what we should be striving to be. That's what they get for using the metric system.
I'm all about it. And, you know, one more thing I do want to add. Is there some sort of mark that we can actually have as we look at, let's just say, we'll go ahead and call it. We've already talked about Woken Token and everything else there, but is there something in which we can look at, like, honestly, with Cuomo, like, right now? Because we've been on him for, like, a month, right?
Right.
Is there a metric in which their own people, can we, like, quantify in which the degree in which they come after him? Because, I mean, AOC has definitely came after him.
AOC's come after
him. I hate to say it, but it's a scale of like 1 to 10.
So one to 10, I think. I mean, we're approaching 6.5, 7. It's getting pretty.
You're
serious.
Say so.
Yeah, because here's why: a growing number, although I haven't checked recently, a growing number of Democrat state legislators in the state of New York are calling on him to resign now. If articles of impeachment. I'm not explicitly familiar with the state of New York Constitution. I would imagine their mechanisms are similar to the federal government. But if articles of impeachment are introduced, you're talking there should be enough votes to impeach him. Now, again, without being familiar with the specifics of how removal from office would go in that particular jurisdiction, are there enough votes to remove? I mean, that would be a big deal. I can't think of the last time a governor was removed from office. I mean, some have resigned in recent memory that you can remember, but being removed from office, we'll have that little data point ready for you come next week when we follow up on this. And we are going to keep tabs on this because this is interesting. He's going to get canned for inappropriate behavior when he really should be canned, perp walked, and potentially thrown in jail for fraud as a result of the death scene in New York nursing homes due to his policy, his willful neglect, and furthermore, the actions taken by him and his staff to cover it up and not be transparent and clear about what occurred.
Couldn't agree more. So, Tommy Best, thanks for the podcast, episode number 40. Anything you want to comment on before you roll out?
No, I'm good. Just go check out those woke points if you don't believe me.
I'll do that right now. Talk to you soon, bro.
Out here.
Thanks for joining the Sports Analog, episode number 40. Stupid, drunk NCAA selection committee. Almost as drunk as me. Oh boy, thanks to Tommy Bench, Dickie Salvo, Bro Exotic for jumping on the Sports Antelope. Be sure and follow us on Instagram at the Sports Antelope. Rate, subscribe, and review. Throw us a few shekels on Anchor while you're at it. We have a few people doing that now. We just put it towards advertising and such. Actually, I'm lying. I just buy more $6 bottles. Look forward to having you guys on next week. We'll break down. We'll get into the Sweet 16, more into the tournament, and yes, we will get into the committee. I can't wait to drop these bombs, baby. Not that it's anything anyone can't find out. It's basic research, but there are some interesting artifacts for which I've uncovered. Don't call me Indiana Jones. Just call me Danny Belts. Keep it real, Anadotians. Chief one won't lose until I choose, which I won't cause I don't retreat. I run you over like a truck and leave you dead in the street. You're inviting me a titan to a battle. Why, I don't.